Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pharrell on the bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out the bad seed, a broken head, a bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad attitude, bad tea, bad lie, bad dude, bad bread, bad attention, bad vibes. Alrighty, they love the FOTB pod. People get off on it. I understand that. It's a problem, but just deal with it. Don't take any flack from your wife or your girlfriend or your mother-in-law or the dog or the kids. You just tell them to have a sandwich because you're listening to Pharrell again with his freak guests, and it's just rocks off time. They love the FOTB. People are talking about it all over the globe. Forget about the world. I'm talking about the globe, son. Like the Harlem Globetrotters. I mean, bigger than life. Today, we have a very interesting guest. This may be my favorite guest of all time because he has saved my life. This is very deep. This is intense. This is Maverick stuff. Titan stuff. I rarely talk about Mavericks and Titans on the bench. Many times you'll hear me interview people and introduce them by their titles. And then there's certain people that get Maverick Titan status. People like Al Davis. He was a Titan. One of the great owners in NFL history. I may hate the Raiders, but I respect Titans. This guy that I'm about to introduce you to is a Titan in my life due to saving it. Constantly dealing with my problems. I don't have a lot of health problems. I have a lot of pain problems. I've broken every bone in my body. I have blown out shoulders, rotator cuffs, labrums, kneecaps, tibia plateaus, hands, feet, double plantar fascia, bone spurs. You name it, I've had it. Shin splints. I've broken every finger on both hands 10 times. In fact, I recently broke my thumb playing basketball, and it has been a slow recovery process. Thumbs never heal. You can break your thumb and think that it's getting better until someone hits it the wrong way and it goes back to ground zero. It never heals. There are certain things that are more important than others in healing, and I believe that this man knows all about that. This is my ass doctor. Dr. G. Double G. Galena, my man, Greg Galena. Greg has saved my ass from me ending up in a casket. A lot of people, including my friends, have had colon cancer, a very dangerous disease, troublesome disease. I have had friends get colon cancer, and I have had friends die of colon cancer. I have had my own sister get colon cancer. I do not like cancer. I am against cancer. I stand up to cancer. And this guy operates on more people with problems, let's just say with their derriere, than anyone in New York City. He is the biggest doctor in New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut and the East Coast. when it comes to asses. Let's get real. This is exactly what we're talking about. Dr. Galena, it's so good to have you on the FOTB podcast. How gracious of you to take time away from the hospital and your millions of patients and your surgery schedule to sit with me on my back deck at the Farrella Palatial to talk about your brilliant career and my ass. Woo! Woo! It's good to see you, Doc.
Great to be seen. Thanks, Scotty. So happy that I'm here. It's an absolute pleasure. It's great that we live 2 miles apart, so it wasn't a very long journey to get here.
We don't tell people where we live, the town, but we can talk about that we live near each other in a very ritzy, high-end, highfalutin, snobby town. Is that about right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Can we get down to business here? You have one of the greatest operations in New York, and it's in northern New Jersey, and it's at the Hackensack University Hospital, a gigantic hospital in the area, one of the bigger hospitals in the area. Is that about right?
It's about right. We are a fantastic medical system, Hackensack Meridian Health, and I'm very proud to be a part of it. Including residency, it's almost 30 years now that I've been there. So I trained there, I came back to practice there, I grew up in the area, and it's been a great joy for me.
Did you grow up here as a little boy?
I grew up in Bergen County since I was a baby, yeah.
As we know now, Bergen County, I guess it's had the highest rate of the Farrell-demic of any county in the state of New Jersey. Is that about right?
That's about right. And actually, in conversations, we know that our hospital, Hackensack University Medical Center, is in the top 5 in the nation in treating patients with the coronavirus.
In other words, there's a lot of people with the COVID in the hospital.
There's a lot of people with the COVID in the hospital, and the hospital has gone through great lengths to accommodate all these patients.
How does that affect you? Are you nervous going in there, or do you not go in there at all right about now?
It's been really a challenging time. It's been the most different time in my career in medicine. So when the virus began, we saw these numbers going up. We saw the numbers escalate. About 4 weeks ago, we shut down all elective surgical procedures, so we're only doing emergencies right now, and the entire hospital is now filled with coronavirus patients. I myself and most of the members of the medical staff are volunteering to do some time in the hospital just to give a break to some of the other people in our critical care departments. And it's a challenging time, and we're getting through it, and we're hoping that we're at the top of the curve right now.
Bottom line is, you have gone over there and helped people. I refer to it as the Hanta. You have gone to help people with the Hanta. And what are you seeing when you're there?
Sick patients.
What kind of sick?
There are patients who are sick where they're just in the hospital with a cough and a fever. And then there are the really sick patients who are on a ventilator, whose lungs don't work well enough where they have to actually be placed on a ventilator, on their stomach. Anesthesiologists, the respiratory techs, the nurses, all of the people in the hospital are pitching in to try to get these patients better. And fortunately, we're able to get a lot of patients better. And unfortunately, way, way too many have died from this virus.
If you were to guess, because I've seen all these hospitals in New York City that are piling up people that have passed because of this disease, this pandemic, how many have you seen them take out of that hospital?
Well, I know from our numbers that the total deaths at Hackensack have been over 500 to 750, somewhere in that range. So a lot of patients have died, but more than that have gone home.
Have you ever in your right mind thought you would see something like this in your lifetime?
No. Truly unimaginable. If I would have seen this pitched as a horror movie, I would have said, that's bullshit. There's no way anything could ever be this pervasive in our area. So no, nothing like it.
So when you were in med school, did they ever teach you about things like this, that there would be the feasibility or possibility of a pandemic?
In population health, in some of the med school classes, it was probably mentioned. I'm going to say in 4 years of medical school, the amount of time we spent discussing pandemics was probably 4 minutes.
So when you were a kid and you were growing up, what did you want to be when you grew up? Did you have plans at a young age like Farrell did? I wanted to be Howard Cosell when I was 7 years old. I've accomplished all of those things, including the Wall Street Journal calling me the Generation X Howard Cosell on the September 5th of 1995 edition of the Wall Street Journal. And I have that plaque in my house. It's the only thing in life that matters to me. But did you want to be a doctor when you were a little kid?
Yes, I did. I'll tell you, pretty interesting that we've become friends, because Cosell was absolutely my favorite journalist.
He was the man.
Favorite sportscaster ever. He was the voice, the insight, the vocabulary. He was unbelievable.
He was smarter than everyone.
He was brilliant, but he was able to still relate to the average person, which made him special. There are a lot of people who didn't like him for a lot of reasons, but his ability to put you in the place where the event was happening, in my opinion, was unparalleled. Matter of fact, I recently watched Ali Frazier 2 and The Thrill in Manila and some of his commentary on it, and it was marvelous.
There was never anyone that was better. In fact, in time, no one has ever been better than him, in my opinion, certainly in boxing. But he also was really good doing football and even baseball. He did everything. The guy was phenomenal at everything. He brought the game to you. But boxing, I think a lot of people remember his relationship with Ali. And those interviews with Ali were the stuff of legend. But, I mean, they have never duplicated what that guy did on Monday Night Football. And they have been trying to play with that formula so many times that there has never been anything in the history of television so butchered by television executives in suits than trying to figure out how to replace Howard Cosell. They have made their own careers laughing stocks trying to replace Howard Cosell. The people that run television suck at picking people to replace legends. They're really bad at it, but they all make millions and think they're great at everything. And they think they're great at telling people who's good on TV and who's good on radio. And you know who's good on TV and radio? The people that do it. I gotta tell you, that guy was so good. Can you imagine some television guy trying to figure out, how do we replace this guy? And they have butchered that like no other thing. Is there any institution in sports that's been so mishandled than Monday Night Football's broadcast booth?
Well, I don't know how they've handled it, but I can tell you that it's never been as good as the first episode. Right? The first season, the first couple seasons, Howard, Don, Frank Gifford, it's never quite gotten to that point.
Not even close.
Talk about the things Cosell could do. One of the great moments of Cosell in Monday Night Football was the Odd Couple episode. He was a good actor. It was terrific. When he was on TV, if you liked him or you hated him, you watched him.
I wanted to be him.
People who can't pick who should be the next whatever. You know who can pick? The fans. People who listen to people who watch. They're tuning in, you're good. If they're not tuning in, you're not good.
Dr. Galena's with us on the FOTB pod. You bring up The Odd Couple. That may be one of the greatest television shows ever. I mean, honestly, when you think about it, what would you put on the same level as that show? Because I think people would say MASH, Cheers, Friends. My wife and daughter watch that silly Friends show like it's good. 5 million episodes of it. I want to kill myself. Can you imagine trying to compare that Femi show to The Odd Couple? What was his name? Klugman? Is Oscar Madison? That was the best thing that I've ever seen in my life. I used to love that show. It was great. And then he was this sports writer with the cigars and the drinking problem. Was there anybody better?
Well, yeah. I mean, to me, that's the Parthenon of sitcoms. MASH, Odd Couple. For me, maybe Mary Tyler Moore, just because of the amount of talent.
I watched it.
The amount of talent on that show.
What was his name? Mr. Grant?
Ed Asner was Mr. Grant, and Ted Knight as Ted Baxter, to me, made the show.
Wasn't Ted Baxter the weatherman?
Yeah, he was the weatherman, but he was the foil. He was brilliant. They don't have characters like that, in my opinion. I'm a classic TV buff, so, you know, I like the old stuff.
So you're a kid, and at what age did you realized that you wanted to be a doctor? And then were your grades up to snuff? Because if you're going into high school, you have to get really good grades to go to college. But to be a doctor, you have to be smarter than good grades. Is that in the realm of your thinking?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I was fortunate enough to get good grades in grammar school and high school and studied hard. So it was really my pediatrician who drove me to be a doctor. And he was this wonderful, old-fashioned, like a TV doctor, country doctor, who was in Northburg. And
right outside the city.
His office is probably worth a gazillion dollars now. 69th Street on Boulevard East.
I used to live there.
Yeah.
It was right next to Weehawken, over the hill. So if you go from the edge of the cliffs overlooking the city in Weehawken, and you go over the hill, over the hump, you go into the like poor neighborhoods.
Right. He was literally about four blocks from the Galaxy on Boulevard East in this old house. And we became friends with him. And he said to me, he thought I was a bright kid, which was very lovely. And he said to me that I should use my gifts and go into medicine. I would be good at it. And it was very gratifying.
And it clicked with you?
It clicked with me. I thought it was a good fit.
So I lived with 34C in North Bergen at one point when we first started having a steamy affair. I was living in Hell's Kitchen, and then we decided to live together, and we got an apartment in North Bergen because I needed to be near the city. I was in the city, and as you know, it's super expensive. So I figured, why not just live up there? It's 5 minutes from the city, and then I could live there and then jump over and do morning drive. And we started living in North Bergen in a dump. But it was really cool because the lady that owned the place, we lived above her. And she was just this cool mom, like, you know, house mom type thing, like in a fraternity. She didn't care what we did. And she knew I was loud. And she knew who I was, what I did for a living. And she let it all happen. She's just like, I don't care what you do. I don't care how much noise you make. I don't care how much you pace or pound on the floors. I don't care how much sex you have. She said, we just are glad you're living here. So we lived there for a little while. I got fired. It was the Opie and Anthony Sex for Sam scandal. And we all got fired, the whole station, like 40 people, when a guy had sex with the chick in the St. Patrick's Cathedral. And I had to tell her, I can't pay you. I lost my job. I can't pay the rent. I got to go. I had a place in Boca. So I moved with 34C to Boca. But we lived in North Bergen for like 2 months. That was it. Right where you got the fire in your arse to become a doctor. So now take me to from high school and the itch to be a doctor. Someone inspired you. What was his name?
Frank Van Orff.
Good old Frank, the country doctor living and working right outside of Manhattan, gave you and inspired you and nudged you forward. And then you decide to go to Rutgers, I believe. Is that about right?
That's correct.
So what happened? You ended up in lovely Piscataway.
And it was in Piscataway, and it was actually in the 80s, and it was a great experience, and I did well. My first year in Rutgers, I was a freshman, and I was not too bright, and I didn't do as well as a freshman as I did eventually. Got my grades up and managed, and then I graduated and actually started med school in Italy. One of my buddies had gone to school in Italy and said, oh, you should come. It's a great experience. And I thought it'd be a great life experience. So I went to Naples from 85 to mid 88.
So wait a minute. You're in Piscataway, New Jersey, right down the road from where you grew up. You're going to school at Rutgers. At the time, were they as bad at sports as they are now? Now, I'll give you this. The basketball program's on the up. They got Schiano back on the football side. Are you, to this day, a Rutgers fan? And do you remember when you were there if they sucked or not and everything? They certainly weren't in the Big Ten then.
So they were good in basketball. It was the Roy Hinson era, and they were pretty good in basketball. It was right after that guy Bailey, I think. I think they had gone to the NCAAs maybe in like 79, and I got there in 80. So they were good in basketball, and they were just terrible in football.
Did you go to the games?
I remember being at the rack and seeing this kid shoot the lights out at the rack one day. Kid from St. John's, wore number 20. Chris Mullin.
Oh, look, the mulling it over. He's mulling it over. He's mulling it over. I'm friends with him. So when I was in San Francisco doing my show on KNBR, it was Run TMC. Remember, it was Tim Hardaway, Mullin, and Mitch Richmond. Run TMC. That's who played together for the Warriors. So Mullin was a fan of the show because I was number one in the Bay. It was the very popular, very rowdy. I'm playing all this heavy metal music, and I was pouring beers for the callers, and it offended all the bosses. They were scared to death of me, but I was on the Warrior station. So when the games ended, he would get in his car to drive home, and the first thing he heard after the game was me. So I was on right after the Warriors games. I got really popular there, and I got to be friends with Mullin, and he was one of the coolest guys ever. He would come back to New York and coach at St. John's. Are you surprised that he walked away from it?
Yeah, a little bit. From what I know of him from his early age, he was a gym rat. Basketball was what he loved. Basketball was what he did every day. So yeah, I'm surprised. And
he learned from Carnesecca.
Right. He was actually on last night. Bruce Beck went to visit Lou Carnesecca.
Right.
On the 11 o'clock news, and Mullin said hello to him.
How is Carnesecca doing?
Not bad for 95. He looks good.
95.
Yeah. So ironically, Lou Carnesecca went to high school with my great uncle, and they were friends. My great uncle's in the St. John's Hall of Fame. He was an NBA player for the Syracuse Nationals in 1949.
Are you kidding? What was his name?
Gerald Calabrese.
Are you ready for the nation's first and only free 24-hour network dedicated to you, the betting and fantasy sports enthusiast? SportsGrid will provide you with real-time content, statistics, and gaming intelligence unlike anything you've ever seen before. Located both in the heart of New York City and inside the FanDuel Sportsbook at the Meadowlands, SportsGrid is live 18 hours a day, here to serve you, the fanatic. This is SportsGrid. Get on the grid.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
How did you go to Rutgers instead of St. John's when your uncle's a legend there? I mean, what have you done, Greg? All these missteps and choices. Who in their right mind would go right when you could have gone left and followed in your uncle's footsteps and been friends with Lou Carnesecca, and you could have ended up being an assistant coach with Chris Mullen with the Johnny's years later, and you would have never been a doctor? What were you thinking?
Well, I think it worked out okay. I was really not very good at basketball. I mean, I knew the ball was round.
And you became a rich doctor?
Yeah, something like that.
All right, so let me get this straight. Now, you told me, I just heard you, and you thought you would slip it in and I wouldn't notice, or that it was just going to go right past me like a fastball high and in, like I wasn't going to notice. Did you just say to me in like some kind of barrage of quickness, you slipped in that you actually moved to Italy, that you went to med school in Italy? So you went from that hellhole down the turnpike and decided, you know, I've had enough of this gang violence and such on campus, and I'm going to get away from all these keg parties and drugs and bad influences, and I'm going to move to Italy. Is that what you just said to me, that you moved to Italy?
Yes, sir, I did.
Where in Italy?
I went to med school in Naples, Italy. First, I spent 3 months in central Italy in Siena learning how to speak Italian, because I didn't really speak Italian. I knew a couple of curse words.
Do you speak fluent Italian to this day?
I don't know if it's fluent, but yeah, I still speak pretty well.
Let me hear some Italian. Say something like whatever you want.
Buongiorno, buon pomeriggio, actually. Pomeriggio non è il giorno. So I said good day, and I said good afternoon, because it's really the afternoon. It's not the morning.
What about, hey, Pharrell, it's great to be on your podcast. There's probably no word for that. Say, it's great to be on your radio show, Pharrell.
Pharrell, è fantastico stare qui sul radio con lei. È veramente un grande accomplishment per me.
Did you ever think at any point that you would become a mobster? An Italian mobster?
No.
Did you ever want to be in the Italian mob? When you learned how to speak Italian, did you feel that you would become a mobster and that you would have many Italian lovers?
I love the idea of the many Italian lovers. The problem was the average life expectancy of the mobster was about 40 years less than I was interested in.
So you wanted to get your medical degree in Italy, in Naples, Italy. Now, I think 34C bragged to you that she was from...
Her father.
From Naples, Italy, right? She plays that card that she's all Italian and everything. Now, where is Naples in conjunction so people can understand the country of Italy where it has been scoured with the Junta? They had a real problem with it over there. Where is Naples? Tell everyone the geographics of the country.
So the Italian-French border is where Milan is, the northernmost portion. About halfway down the boot is Rome. And then halfway between Rome and the bottom of the boot, or Sicily, is Naples. It's a beautiful city.
And where is Florence in conjunction to
Florence
that?
Is north. east of Rome, which is well north of Naples.
Between Milan and Rome is Florence.
Correct.
So when you were living in Italy, going to school, did you have time to go around the country and hit all of those spots and see it all and be a tourist?
Yeah, so we were able to really spend a couple of great times and tour the country. One of the things I'm really proud of is as I made Mass for Easter Sunday in the Vatican three times.
And who was the Pope in those three times? Do you remember which ones?
I think it was John Paul who was there.
John Paul was a rock star.
John Paul II.
What was it like seeing the Pope in the Vatican, in the square in Rome? I mean, that's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I even want to do that. We were supposed to go to Italy. Did you know that? I don't know what happened. We were going to rent a villa. There was about 12 of us going. One thing led to another, and I didn't go. But I still want to go there. I've never been there. I think it would be exotic. Although I am massively turned off by chicks with hairy armpits. I just wanted to say that. When you were there going to school, did you see hot women? Like 34 Seal, tell me that the faces are beautiful. These women are the most beautiful women. Their eyes and faces and hair and eyebrows and everything and lips. The most beautiful women in the world are in Italy. And then they wave to get a cab and they have giant hairy armpits and you just want to jump off a cliff. I just can't handle some chick with hairy armpits. In fact, I want you to know that I did an entire podcast on hairy armpitted chicks. I did it. It was very popular, highly downloaded. One of the highest rated shows I ever did on gross chicks that don't shave their hair. Hairy legs, hairy home plate, hairy armpits, hairy face. What's worse than a chick with a beard? So when you were there, did you see that and think to yourself, I'm from Bergen County, New Jersey, and these smoke show hotties have hairy armpits?
Yeah, there were certainly a couple of those that were hot and hairy and were a turnoff, but there are plenty that were hot and not hairy and were outstanding.
So wait, you're telling me on this very Pharrell on a Bench podcast that there was a portion of the entity, otherwise known as hot Italian women, that had no hairy armpits. There were those that were against the grain?
Absolutely.
So how long did you stay in Italy with your new Italian language and your new career path to make this all come to fruition and be a doctor and to get it done? How long did it take you to be there? I want to understand, is it just like a 4-year thing, or did you do a residency there, or did you come back to America to do that?
So Italian medical school is different than American medical school. It's 6 years. The first 2 years of med school are mostly stuff that you do in college here, but it's not like you can go in there and start in the middle. So the first 2 years were a lot of repetitive things with a couple of new courses. And then by the middle of the third year, I was able to take an exam and I had decent grades and I transferred. I decided I wanted to graduate from an American medical school because there are more opportunities for training if you have an American diploma.
So you left?
I left. I transferred.
So you were there 4 years?
3 years.
And transferred?
Transferred and then did 3 years at George Washington in Washington, D.C.
GW is a great school. Another basketball school.
Yeah, and they were good then too. It's a great school. It's a great campus.
When you were there and you were busy trying to get your degrees in medicine, did you have time still to go to basketball games and be a sports fan? And you were also admitting earlier that you were a television junkie. Did you do all of that stuff while you were in med school, or were you drowning in schoolwork?
A little of both. So I definitely went to a couple of games, a couple of Capitals hockey games, if I remember correctly, but that was about it. Med school was much more about the work than college and other events.
Did you go to Redskins games and Bullets games at the time? It had to be the Bullets.
I did not go to the Bullets. I went to RFK for a concert.
Who did you see? The Grateful Dead?
Might have been Genesis. Might have been Phil Collins.
Phil Collins.
Might
Genesis.
Have been Phil Collins and Genesis.
Was that the name of his band? Always Genesis?
He was with Genesis and he had a whole solo career.
Right. I know the solo career, but I think Genesis is coming back this summer.
Yeah, I think you might be right about it.
He's going on tour with Genesis again.
Well, who knows now?
I think they are. Well, listen, I don't believe in all this rules and such. I can't have my summer ruined by the Pharrell Demic. So let's stay positive, doctor. We cannot keep canceling events. Aren't you going to Turks and Caicos soon?
Well, we have plans to go to Turks and Caicos sometime in the summer.
I am surprised that you have not vacationed with me. You've spent so much time in my ass that I would think that at some level we've become very close, almost like lovers. You've spent more time with me than my own wife, and I am surprised, knowing that your hot wife is my travel agent, that you have never traveled with me, actually. Is there something that you're not telling me? You don't like me. You're sick and tired of me. You think my show sucks. Maybe when I've had my 7 surgeries with you on my ass, I farted on you. Something like that. Did something happen that I don't know about that you refuse to take me to Turks and Caicos or one of your many other high-end, falutin, rich doctor trips you go on?
Well, no, you know, we go on these plane trips. You know, Turks and Caicos is a big deal, but we bring the kids. You guys travel really, like, you know, in the upper echelon. You're with the A-listers. You know, we doctors, you know, it's not like the old days.
You heard me before. I said, I want to go to Hawaii. And she said, 34C, I will not fly anywhere 12 hours. And then what did I say? I said, you will fly first class 12 hours anywhere, right? And she said, well, the tickets are $300 right now. And I went, I will pay $1,000 each for the whole family. Would you pay $4,000 to fly 12 hours there and back first class?
Absolutely.
So that's smart, right, on my part?
My wife's the same.
Have you been there?
We've been there.
So I used to have a place in Kona. Back in the day, I had a pad there when I lived in L.A. So when you live in L.A. and it's nice every day of the year, and you golf 6 days a week, and you surf, and you skateboard, and you're tan, and you never have snow or ice or anything like that, where do you think people in Los Angeles go on vacation? There's two places. One is Hawaii, and the other one I went to was Tahiti. Where do you go when you live in L.A. to go on vacation? Do you think people from L.A. go to Florida to sweat in June, July, sweat their ass off in August? No one from L.A. does that. Where do they go on vacation? They go west. They go to Hawaii. Like, everyone in Hawaii is from the mainland, is from L.A. and San Francisco. They all go there. And there's 50 flights a day from both of them to Hawaii, right? So for me, it was 4 hours flight from L.A. to Hawaii. I used to have a place in Kona. I first started going like Kahanapali, Maui, all that, and I fell in love with it. Can you imagine that some woman, 34C, would not go there based on the length of the flight? Because I flew 11 hours to Tahiti. I thought it was the longest yard. But once I got there, I sailed on a ship for 30 days in Papia, Raiatea, Marae. It was awesome. And then when you go to Hawaii, can you imagine 2 weeks in Hawaii? Would the flight of 12 hours be worth it if you went and stayed in a sick-ass villa or in a sick-ass Ritz or Four Seasons or something, and you paid $4,000 for the flights, and then you paid another 10 or 15 to be there for 2 weeks, not 1 week, but would you do it if you could do it for 2 weeks?
I would, but my wife, like your wife, says the flight's too long.
Is that what she says?
Swear to God.
Well, maybe those two clowns can go to their weasel-ass Turks and Caicos, which is 3 hours away, and you and I can roll over to Hawaii and see the Rolling Stones and go to a luau, Bakalulu, mahalo. I got it all. Wasn't I just telling you about big wave surfing?
You were.
We could go to the Pipeline Masters. We should go to Hawaii and see surfing competitions and girls in bikinis. Do you agree with that?
Sounds fantastic.
All right, so you transfer and you go to GW, and then you've already done 3 years, almost four. How much longer did you have to go to get your medical degree?
It was 3 more years because, like I said, the medical school in Italy was 6 years. So a lot of the stuff that I had done in Italy didn't really count towards American school.
So now how long have you been doing it? 6, 7?
6 years from when I started to when I finished, yeah.
That costs an arm and a leg, doesn't it?
Finishing paying my student loans May of this year.
Are you kidding? Now stop. You're telling me that you got your medical degree in what year?
92.
In 92, you were done. So how old are you?
58.
So wait, you're older than me by 4 years. When did you start going to get your medical degree?
85.
And when did you go to Rutgers?
88, 84.
So that would make sense because I was 83 to 87. So you finally got it done. And how much would you say that cost you?
Hard to say, you know.
Would you put a ballpark number on it?
I'm going to say ballpark 150, maybe 200. And then you accrue the interest. But be frank, part of the reason I'm finishing my loans now is because some of the med school loans, the last loans, I refinance them at about 2.5%. It's worth it to just wait to pay them off.
So do most kids that go to med school, is that the route they take? They have to get loans to do it. It's no joke.
While I was teaching our students, we'd always talk about that. And the average medical student now graduates with somewhere between 150 and 250 in student debt.
So why is it that if a kid went to, let's say, Duke or Miami, or you went to... Let's say you went to Chapel Hill, to North Carolina or something, or to Maryland, or let's say Tennessee or South Carolina, like an SEC school. Don't you think it's at least $50,000 a year to go to those schools?
Oh, easy, yeah.
So it would be $200,000 to $300,000 just to go to those schools for 4 years. If you go for 5 years, you're looking at $300,000.
Right. Well, you're hoping that, you know, a lot of these kids will try to get help. They'll get some kind of subsidy or whatever where they're not paying the full load.
How many kids you got?
I have three.
And you're going to put them all through college and pay for that?
Well, that's sort of the plan, yeah.
So you're going to go broke is what you're telling me.
Yes, three girls, too. So if you count three weddings, I'm going to die in debt.
So basically what you're establishing here today is that you're doomed. Your life is doomed. All of the money that you've accrued as this phenomenal surgeon, the best surgeon, one of the best in North America, that all of the financials that you've gained and glory and all of your fame and everyone knows you everywhere, all over the globe, it's all going to three chicks that you assume to be yours and that you love. You're going to give all of it to them and then pay for their weddings too. And then if you don't do that, your wife will have you castrated.
Pretty much that's how it stands, yeah.
So how much do you think weddings cost? $50,000 each?
Yeah, I'm going to say that's...
It's a good ballpark
40
number.
To 80, yeah, I think 40 to 80.
40 to 80. How old are your daughters now?
My twins are 13 and my youngest is 11.
So do they know at all? They have no clue or concept whatsoever of who I am.
I don't think so, no.
No. Meanwhile, I've known you for a long time. And your wife has been my agent for a long time. But you don't bring the business home to the kiddies. Like, you never said, can you believe that I operate on Pharrell on the bench's ass? Not once ever at the dinner table, like to even your wife, and then the daughter said, who's Pharrell on the bench? And then just say, don't worry about it, kid. Have a sandwich. You never once brought up my ass after seven surgeries. You've never once talked about my ass at the dinner table.
It never came up in conversation. Over the mac and cheese.
I'm surprised because, let's face it, I have one of the most important asses, I believe, on the Eastern Seaboard. Think about it. Who do you think of all your clients has a more significant ass than me?
No one.
So why wouldn't you talk about my ass with your wife? Your wife's my travel agent. She's taken me on 50 vacations at least in my life. She handles all my affairs. She's the best person, Lisa, on the face of the earth. And not once did she ever ask you about my ass. Not even like, does he have a nice ass? Or even, does he have a firm ass? Or does he have a good looking ass? Not once ever. Because, you know, you, she loves. Me, she's been involved in my happiness for so long. She never brought up my ass to you?
No, but you know that your wife and she talk about it because I'll get, show, can you read this text? That's what I get.
Want to light the lamp on DraftKings and FanDuel this NHL DFS season? Then join DailyRoto.com and learn from the best daily fantasy sports players. Get updated fantasy hockey projections for NHL DFS, line combinations, and build stacks for tournaments in the DailyRoto NHL DFS lineup optimizer. If you are playing daily fantasy hockey without using DailyRoto, you are doing it wrong. Enter the promo code ACTION for a 10% discount. That's promo code ACTION for a 10% discount.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is going to be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, so when I wanted you to feel up my peanut, not my package, but the peanut I have above my groin, seemed like a rock or something, like a nugget. Maybe I swallowed a peanut or a nugget of chicken at some point. It went down the wrong pipe and ended up lodged in an area above my groin. Did you find any level of concern when I told you to feel my peanut?
No, I didn't find any level of concern with your peanut. Doesn't feel like it's a serious problem. And I'm really happy that you had a CAT scan a few months ago, because I'll go look at it and make sure there was
When I have had surgeries on my arse, has there ever been a point, because I'm not a shower, I'm a grower. When I play basketball, my package shrinks and my home plate area, it's like a turtle. What happens is it protects itself inside the shell and goes into hiding when I play basketball. Did you ever notice when you were operating on my ass if my same scenario played out, that my onions and package turned into a turtle and went into its shell to hide from the large tools that you were injecting into my ass?
Fortunately, in the operating room, we usually have you covered with some drapes so I don't have to deal with the package from the front end. I stick to my area of specialty, and it's like Alice in Wonderland. You know, you go into that little hole and there's a whole world of fascination inside there.
So you went to these great lengths to become a doctor, and you spent all this money that you paid off over 25 years. How many years now have you actually been a surgeon?
I've been in practice 22 years, yeah. This will be 22 years this year.
And you've operated on thousands of asses, thousands. You're the number one surgeon in the tri-state area. You operate on more asses than anyone at all on the face of the earth. Now, let me ask you, I've always talked, as you know, because my other ass doctor, because I have two, one is more of a urologist, right? The guy that does my annual Pittsburgh Steeler prostate exam, where he asked me, how do you think the Penguins are going to do in the playoffs this year? And how is the Pirate season going? He goes in and, let's just say, spins my flower. So I go to him, and I always say the funny line he used to say to me was, you're going to find out right now why I make more money than you. And then I think to myself, man, that's a job that's a commodity job. In my opinion, in some level, it's a hot commodity job, because you would think most doctors that want to go to med school, my guess would be they want to be some fancy pediatrician or general doctor, or they want to do plastic surgery, or they want to be a heart surgeon, or, you know, something of that nature. At what level did you decide, because you had to be pretty shrewd, in my opinion, I mean this, to know that you wanted to be an ass doctor? I hate to put it that way. What do you call it?
It's a colon and rectal surgeon.
And I knew that because I've seen you 5 million times. Colorectal surgery, and I've had friends, like I said, with colon cancer, so they all see colorectal doctors, right? So at what point did you actually decide at school, you know, maybe I would make a lot of money if I just dedicated my practice to asses, because I think it's smart, because most people would be like the plastic surgeon, I'll make a fortune, or I'm going to operate on people having heart attacks. I have one guy that does boobs, right? A lot of those guys are plastic surgeons, the ones that do boobs, right? Some do faces, some do boobs, things of that nature, right? Or do they do the same thing? They do all of it.
A lot of them do all of it. Some of them do specially just cosmetics, boobs, faces. Some do reconstructive plastic surgery. It's a broad field. But the guys who do really well at cosmetics usually do a lot of cosmetics.
But honestly, you can't deny to me, and I'm just going to say it, I know a guy that's great at it, and he's a good friend of mine, and I love him, and he's done surgery on me. He took a cyst off of my back. I had like a golf ball on my back, and he cut it out. Did a great job. He had the gall to like charge me. I was like, dude, are you serious? We've been friends for 30 years. You're going to charge me? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, I'm going to sleep with your wife. Okay? So I'm going to beat your face, sleep with your wife, just cut out the golf ball out of my back and let's go. So he eventually just didn't charge me. It's very important because I was like, I'm Pharrell. You need to fix my back, bro. Come on. So he fixed it. But he does a lot of faces and boobs and things of this nature. Very famous guy. I love him. But do you not believe in your heart of hearts that people that do it, at some level, the people that have it done to their faces look like cats at the end of the day? You know what I mean?
So what my wife says is that, you know, she used to sell injectables in plastic surgery. And she said the people who look great, who are aging and still look great, have had really good work. The people who look like freaks have had bad work.
So in other words, you believe that some people can actually make you look better against Father Time. Most people are 0-for against Father Time, right? Father Time never loses. But at some level, you think that surgeons can do a nice job getting rid of your crow's feet, your wrinkles. They can Botox your forehead and make it tight, and that no one will know. So I know when my friends have hair plugs put in and they think they fooled everyone and we don't see them for 6 weeks or 10 weeks or whatever the hell it takes. And then I know people, one day you got crow's feet and the next month I see you and you don't. Or one day you got a crossword puzzle on your forehead and then 2 months later you have none. So you don't think people know when people have plastic surgery?
I think it's hard to tell, but I think that the people who keep up with it and get it done a little bit at a time, if you look at some actors, actresses who look terrific at an older age, I think they've had good work done. And, you know, there are very few who have had nothing done who still look great.
Do you think that those doctors have made a killing on that type of surgery, that their practice is like just raking money?
Like ship containers full of money.
Really?
Yeah.
So they're just raking it in like ship containers, literally from Bogota, cocaine shipments of money.
Yeah, there's a scene in Denzel Washington's Equalizer where they go in a warehouse and there's pallets of shrink-wrapped $100 bills. That's what these guys have.
I believe that. So at what point did you just choose to do colorectal and that you were going to operate on asses like mine?
After I graduated med school, I went to surgical residency, which I did at what's now the Rutgers program in Newark. And during residency, you get exposure to a lot of different subspecialties: cardiac, general surgery, plastic surgery, neurosurgery, etc. And I worked with a guy who was a mentor to me, and I kind of talked to him a little bit about what his practice life was like. And there were a couple things that I thought were great about colorectal surgery. One is that you have a lot of different variety. I have a low attention span, so I can't do the same thing over and over again every day. So I have a practice where I do my endoscopy, colonoscopies, take off polyps, screening, colon cancer screening, and that's one practice. part of my practice is the rectal practice, or the old, what they used to call proctology practice, anal rectal surgery, hemorrhoids, fissures, fistulas, a lot of stuff that you know.
That's my area of expertise.
A lot of stuff that you know way more about than the general public does. And then there's major surgeries, right? Colon cancer, diverticulitis surgery. So there are three separate subspecialties in colorectal surgery.
Diverticulitis, my buddy had it. He described it as like having sharp popcorn kernels cut a hole in his colon, and it leads to all kinds of problems. That was the way he described it to me.
It's an inflammatory process, usually involves the colon that's on the left side of the abdomen, and it's characterized by pain, sometimes fever, and it can go anywhere from being where you just kind of feel like you have a bellyache, you don't feel good for a couple of days, to where it makes a hole in the colon bursts open, and then it's an emergency operation.
Well, that's what he had. He had a hole that cut open, and it was disaster, and he was in the hospital for a while.
Yeah, it can be really severe. It can be life-threatening, and unfortunately, people with other diseases.
How do you get that?
You know, unfortunately, it's poorly understood. Back 20 years ago, we used to tell people not to eat seeds and nuts and popcorn kernels.
That's what he said. It was about seeds and popcorn kernels and stuff like that.
Yeah, unfortunately, the data has not borne that out. We don't really know what causes diverticulitis or why people get it.
All right, so I knew that it was kernels and stuff could create these holes in your colon. And you're saying that that's not true.
Fortunately or unfortunately, that data has pretty much been disproven. So about 10 years ago, there's actually New England Journal of Medicine article, but everybody's looked at it 100 ways to Sunday. We used to tell people no seeds, no nuts, no popcorn, and that data has been disproven. And then we told people, you know, eat a lot of fiber, drink a lot of water. And even that is questionable. I mean, I still try to practice that because it's overall good for colon health. But as far as the actual cause of diverticulitis, it is still completely unknown.
So it sounds like you told me that you have three different kind of versions of your practice. There's three different ways you do it. You have the colon side, and then there's scopes, and then there's major ass surgery.
Yeah, right. So colon is major colons. So colon cancers, patients who have like familial colon cancers where they need part of their colon taken out or all of their colon taken out.
What happens to someone that has their entire colon taken out?
So there are two operations for people who need their entire colon out. Patients who have like a familial syndrome of colon polyps or who have a chronic inflammatory condition. You remove the whole colon, and one thing you can do is just do a permanent bag, what's called an ileostomy.
Oh, God. No, wait a minute. Now stop. So you're telling me when my buddy had colon cancer and he had all of his radiation treatments and chemo, so the entire time he was wearing a colonoscopy bag, he had one on for months, and every day he's toting that thing around. I mean, you gotta be kidding. So you're telling me
a colonoscopy bag, it's a colostomy
bag. I get all these things wrong. I'm not a doctor, as you know, but I play one on General Hospital. So my buddy had to cruise around with one of those bags on his person, on his body, for like a year. How long typically is radiation and chemo for colon cancer?
So radiation chemo is usually for rectal cancer, the cancer closest to the opening. The treatment regimen is about 6 months, but then there's a break between the chemotherapy and then the radiation. And then post-radiation, we wait about 10 weeks before surgery. So it's about 8 months usually, 6 to 8 months between the time you're diagnosed and the time you have the definitive surgery.
So I'm right. It was like 8 or 10 months.
Right. After the major surgery, to reverse the bag, you wait about another 8 weeks to make sure everything you've done is healed.
Wait a minute. Does he still have to wear it then?
Until it's healed completely, yeah.
So you're literally wearing a bag for a year.
6 months is if everything is streamlined and goes perfectly, and you don't need one prior to the first operation, but can be up to a year, yeah.
What could be worse than having that every day, carrying that bag around with cable in it? Honestly.
What's worse? Cancer? Dying?
Well, I guess. I mean, that obviously is not a very positive alternative, Dr. Galena. Nobody wants that to happen to anyone. I certainly wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, except a few of them. I could go down the list if you really want. Might take a while, though. It might be an entire different show. I got an idea. Why don't we do another show? Because I think it's very important that we delve into my ass. I think it's important that we discuss the many adventures of Pharrell's Ass Chronicles, as I've called it before. You know that a lot of people have offered me books and such in my career. Write a book about your career, Pharrell. We'd love to hear stories of you getting in fights with radio executives and program directors. And I've never done the book that everybody wants me to write. I've never accepted a book offer, although I have thought of doing an entire series on my Ass Chronicles, because I think the stories of my ass surgeries are way funnier and way more important to the world than my radio career. Would you agree with that?
Well, to me, that sounds like one of those five-night miniseries events. Kind of like the Ten Commandments.
Like the Michael Jordan.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's 270 episodes or something. 5,000 hours.
It's 5 two-part series. I think we could do Pharrell's Ass Chronicles in the same amount of space. I think it would happen. We're talking to Dr. Galena, Greg Galena. He's rock star status. He's going to do another podcast with us to talk about my ass problems on the FOTB pod. Check out who.
Want to be the next Daily Fantasy Millionaire? Dunk on your NBA DFS competition with DailyRoto.com and dominate on FanDuel and DraftKings this season. Compete with the pros with DailyRoto.com, Optimizer, and the most accurate projections in NBA DFS, plus lineup alerts, breaking news, late swap support, and much more. Save 10% on winning NBA DFS advice with promo code DUNK. Visit DailyRoto.com/DUNK to learn more.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.